now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. A lot of these people that have all these abilities, who have celestial star ancestry, they're operating not only throughout this cosmos, but in higher planes, and they're working against the Draco Empire. The photonic energy and the cosmic rays will activate our higher centers. And it's incumbent upon us to ride that frequency wave. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, our very special guests are Sandra Fecht, Dave Staffen, and Francis Toews. Sandra Fecht is a therapist who, for many years, has specialized in marriage counseling, treatment for depression, anger management, and PTSD treatment. Over time, a number of clients began coming to her reporting satanic ritual abuse, mind control, and related issues. Instead of fleeing from the subject matter, Sandra Fecht delved into it and wanted to learn as much as she could about satanic ritual abuse, mind control, and related issues. And now she has become a leading figure in helping people to heal, not just physically and emotionally, but also energetically, and Sandra Fecht will talk about this during the interview today. Our other two guests are clients and colleagues of Sandra Fecht. Francis Toews is a survivor of satanic ritual abuse of three varieties: the ancient ritualistic cult, the scientific governmental MKUltra, and the very high-tech form of mind control. Francis works together with Sandra Fecht on the healing solutions for the satanic influences on the energetic field of experiencers of SRA. Dave Staffen, likewise, is a client and colleague of Sandra Fecht and has been working on healing and working through the trauma, both physical, emotional, as well as energetic trauma that he's been subjected to from the satanic cults. And Dave Staffen is here to share what he has learned and to let us know about the healing and the journey that he's taken. So without any further ado, Sandra Fecht, Fran Toews, and Dave Staffen, how are you?
I'm excellent, and thank you for having me on this show, and thank you for the work you do, James. I'll begin by telling you a little bit about my history. I started out as the eldest child of two World War II veterans, both in PTSD, and so I have had a lot of exposure to post-traumatic stress. My father was trained as a commando initially before he went into the Air Force, and, you know, when your parents have had those kinds of war experiences, there are certain things that you're told as a child, like don't sneak up behind them. There's very little fun because all of the adults are sitting around chain-smoking and trying to de-stress and de-traumatize themselves from what has happened to them. You know, my early childhood consisted of learning the names and the sounds of the various airplanes that might be a threat to me. And so it was not only intergenerational fear, but also fear in the moment. You know, PTSD can be passed down from one person, one generation to another. And not only is it genetic, but the people teach their children how to be afraid, trying to protect them. So that was my early childhood, and along with hunger and cold, because there was nothing in England, there was no food, very little heat, and so on. And so it was a very difficult start, and it's not much surprise that I set out to be a therapist and try and heal the world and make it better. And of course, I was trained in traditional therapy, you know, talking therapy. And I found it wasn't very satisfactory in getting the results I wanted, but I persisted. Back in the 70s, 1970, I moved up to the Northwest Territories and was fortunate enough to be able to witness a tribe of Dene Native people, First Nations people, who only 15 years before were still living off the land. They still knew how to smoke tan hide and, you know, dry their fish and so on. They lived off the land. Everything they needed came from nature. And these people were on a direct collision course with Euro-Canadian society. And I learned from them a great deal of what an alternative society would look like. You know, when you grow up, you think that your family, your society, that's like the number one, right? And when you individuate from your family, which is one step in growing up, you see what's right and wrong with your family. If you've had a reasonable family, you're able to do that. And my feeling is we also need to individuate from our society. Anyway, what happened then was that having this alternative view of what a society could be like, and one example I'll give is that the chief and the hunter would eat last if there was a moose shot, for example. So they would bring the moose into a village. The weak, the poor, the elderly, although everybody's about the same in terms of financial status, the children, all of those people would eat first. And then the people would eat in inverse order of status within the tribe. So that was a real eye-opener for me. The other thing that was an eye-opener was how strong but gentle the women were. And the same with the men. They were so grounded and they had such an inner locus of control. If somebody wanted to do something, they did it. If they didn't want to do something, they didn't do it. They hadn't been bossed around by anyone. And in their language, when they said a baby is born, it was like, this is the person who came through me. And there's such a difference in terms of how much respect is shown that child when you use that language. I came to realize how important it is to, you know, preserve oral traditions. Anyway, so those children were allowed to make their own decisions. I don't know of any kids in Western society that were given as much autonomy and independent decision-making as those children. So we came back to Southern Ontario. And I was working in a hospital when there was a call for people to deal with childhood sexual abuse. And you had to volunteer 5 hours a week for 2 years, which I did. And then I started to realize that a lot of the people that I had been seeing as adults were presenting as if they had been sexually abused as children. And as stunning as it seems in 2017, back in the early 80s, we did not recognize sexual abuse. In fact, in the late 70s, I had worked in a training school, and there were children there who had been prostituting since they were 9 years old. And you know what, James? We never once held the parents or anyone else accountable. These were bad kids. So we'd sit around as a team of therapists going, well, what happened? You know, why are these children so bad? And we thought it was them. We never, ever considered anything else. Anyway, so I came back to the hospital, and one day at rounds, I thought, you know, I have a woman who is presenting with symptoms that would be consistent with childhood sexual abuse. And I will give your listeners an alert. This is really quite terrible. So if you are delicate, please cover your ears for about 5 seconds. She was cutting herself and mutilating her genitals. And I thought it was reasonable to assume that she might have been abused. So I took that case to rounds, and it was the end of my reputation at that hospital. They accused me of having a filthy mind and being perverted and so on, because people in my town were not sexually abusive or being sexually abused. It was just in California, your homeland. So you'll be happy to know that. We blamed the Californians. So after a while, I mean, I was screamed at, you know, for several years, and I finally left. I couldn't take it anymore. Anybody who's a pioneer in this field will find there are all kinds of societal and professional restrictions and, you know, abuses if you step out from it. Anyway, so I thought, no, there's got to be a way to deal with this stuff. And there were a few therapists around who also recognized the reality of sexual abuse, but we would I call the 80s the therapy wars, because we would have arguments about whether or not we should be treating sexual abuse or if we should just leave it alone. I was on the side of treating it, obviously. And what I started to do was study and learn and observe and take people into an alpha brainwave state so that they could find the repressed memories, because I realized that it's not just the conscious memories that give you trouble. It's the things that you are not able to process at the time. And if you can't process it, that's when post-traumatic stress comes in. Also realize the importance of dealing with the energetics, which is where I feel there's a real gap in treatment for a traumatized population. And most of us are traumatized. Certainly the men in our society, most of them are traumatized. Between industrialization and wars, almost every male out there has trauma of some sort. There's also trauma that's perpetrated in terms of being veterans, in terms of first responders. And do you know, if you've been married to a narcissist for any length of time, that you have the same biochemistry, biochemical reaction as soldiers who have been on the front line of a war? That people who have been married to narcissists are in post-traumatic stress because of the biochemical that results from being treated the way narcissists treat those who are close to them. But what started to happen was that as I was more and more skillful at eliciting unconscious memories, I started to hear enormously strange stories. People started telling me about rituals and hooded people and, you know, alert to your listeners, this is going to get a little difficult if any of them need to get children away from the radio or, you know, if they're delicate. They would talk about blood sacrifices, being forced to murder, being forced to marry Satan in horrific rituals, tortures in having to hurt others, like for tortures, and all kinds of disgusting things, being urinated on, defecated on, being hurt in ways that are almost unimaginable. Some people started to report things like demonic entities and shape-shifting reptilians and on and on. And here I am, you know, new to all of this, and I thought at first these people are nuts, you know, they just got to go back to their psychiatrist, get on medication, because these things were not happening in my world. I mean, sexual abuse didn't happen in Aurelia, and satanic abuse didn't happen in my world. But you have to have convincers about why something's true. And I've come up with 5 or 6 convincers for myself. If I've had the experience, if several of my clients are reporting the same events, if it's in the Bible, if it's scientifically proven, or if it's in First Nations folklore, then you've got to believe it. You know, where else does this stuff come from? So at some point after I've heard it from enough people, the penny finally dropped for me. It's like, this is true. And my final convincer came when I reported to the police several incidents. Like, for one thing, I received a death threat saying, back off or else. And I thought, well, I'm not backing off, so I guess it's plan B. And then my building was spray painted with what I later found out were satanic symbols. I didn't even know there were satanic symbols. One of my clients told me. So that was number 2. And there was a third thing. And I reported all of these things to the police. And all my police reports disappeared. And that was the final convincer for me, that all of my police reports disappeared. And whose interest would it be in to do that? So I really started to listen and pay attention. And eventually I got to the place where I realized this stuff was going on. And then someone told me about David Icke. And I read David Icke's book, The Biggest Secret, and there was nothing in his books that he found as an independent journalist that I hadn't found from my office here in Aurelia, Ontario. And it was stunning to me. It was such a paradigm shift. What is going on in the world? And that started me down my personal rabbit hole of investigating what is happening. And I have since come to realize that there are these organizations all over the world, not all of which know what other people are doing, but it's run from the very top. And, you know, they're all feeding into this top-down program or bottom-up program, whichever way you want to do it. There's a book called Pawns in the Game by a fellow named William Carr, and it reflects the anti-Semitic and anti-racial sentiment of the time. But he really does outline the inner workings of the Illuminati, who were formed in Europe in 1774, and their plan to take over the world. And their plan to take over the world included destroying the youth, breaking up families, getting control of the food system, getting control of the media, and slanting things. And certainly you watch it. When you see it with new eyes, you can see it happening. And you watch it, and even on the television commercials here, I think we had a brief chat about that the other day, James, where you watch the commercials, and the younger generation are always kind of disdainful of the older generation, who are depicted as bumbling idiots, you know. So our children are deliberately being fed this stuff. It's taking families and further dividing them. So eventually, I met Dave, who came into therapy for a marital problem, and I'll let him tell you that story. And my part of this story is that he kicked me out of my basement office and said, "Sandra, you've got something to offer here." And I'm like, "Oh, I don't know about that." But he insisted I go to a workshop in Connecticut, the SMART conference in Connecticut. And I listened to the other therapists speaking and realized they didn't know what I knew. I thought, I hate to give Dave credit, but my God, maybe he was right about this. And anyway, the thing, as I said earlier, that I found is that they did not include an energetic piece in their therapy. And for me, that was the most powerful part of the healing, is that we have an aura, an assemblage point, chakras, and meridians, any one of which can be accessed and controlled. And the rituals that are done by these satanic groups are done to destroy our energetic field. And what they want to do is take our energy and take our souls and gifts. And it truly is a spiritual battle. And then I was fortunate enough to have Fran join the team. Fran has an unusual gift of being able to ask the right questions. And we started to come up with some amazing, amazing answers. And with my little froggy throat, I think I'll turn it over to Dave and Fran for a moment to give their parts of the story.
Well, I guess I could start where I met Sandra. Like, I finally realized at 53 years old that the problems of my marriage were all my fault because of my ever-present anger that was just ready to explode from underneath my exterior, from inside, my subconscious. I'd been angry all of my adult life without ever knowing why. When it became clear to me that I was the cause of the problems in my marriage, I was determined to do something about it. So my wife and I searched for a marriage counselor, and I still remember the day I was looking through the yellow pages, and I put my finger on a name that I was going to call on the phone. And as I was putting my finger on her name, God took my finger and moved it over to Sandra's name. And I'll never forget that. So I ended up calling Sandra, and I started seeing her in July, I believe, of 2007. And it was unlike anything I had ever experienced dealing with Sandra. I'm a guy. I had come from the sports world, and I had a little difficulty with some of Sandra's methods that seemed a little bit, well, I guess effeminate might be one word, but like, I was a jock at that time, and it was very difficult for me. But my determination to rid myself of the anger that had been with me for so long was my prime motivator. So we started to uncover things, I would have these little memories that were very easy to recover. In his book, The Biology of Belief, Dr. Bruce Lipton states that each cell in our body is an entity unto itself. Each cell has its own brain. And all these cells are connected energetically with one another and form our subconsciousness. And our subconscious is like a tape recorder that records every single event from the time we're in the womb until this date now. We can be asleep, we can be drugged, as I was multiple times in my adult life, or any other altered state. So I started having these memories with Sandra, and like she said, you just close your eyes and concentrate on a certain age, and they come very quickly, for me anyway. And I started to have some memories of being sexually abused by relatives that have now deceased. But that really surprised me because I had never had even an inkling of anything like that. Those memories went on and on, and eventually I was having memories of being forced to kill small animals with a knife. And I got further and further along and realized my mom and dad were, I was born into a family of Satanists who both parents adhered to the methods, practices, and traditions of Satanism. So Sandra's methods are so simple that an average guy like myself could learn how to do many of them, and I did. Well, the spiritual component took hold pretty quickly in me also. In early 2008, when I realized my parents were actually the architects of all the things that had happened to me in my life, I was overwhelmed with fear as a result of the fear mind control programs that were put into me as a little boy and throughout my life. And when I say when I was in fear, I slept with a flare gun from a boat under my pillow for probably about 6 weeks. And that's what took me to God and spirituality. And one day while reading Psalm 91, I was reading Psalm 91 because I wanted God's help to get rid of my fear. And as I was reading Psalm 91 one day, for probably about the 50th time I was reading it, not that day, but successive days, it was like a thunderbolt of insight struck me in the heart. And at that point in time, I knew that when I'm aligned with God, I need not fear anything. At that point in time, it really changed my life. So I became very spiritually oriented, and I was determined to climb as high as I could spiritually. Well, during that process, I learned that healing work and spiritual work is one and the same thing, because each involves removing a block to God's love, which is our essence. So it ended up that my memories, like I said, I used to I'd have 10 or 12 a day myself in between times of seeing Sandra. And at 2 years old, I think it would be around 2.5 years old, I was taken to events at the bottom of our local church. It was the Anglican church. And I was put through a series of events to test my courage, my determination, loyalty, because those in the cults want to know the attributes of their offspring so they can be utilized as that child matures into a young man, right? So I went through, I had many memories of those times, and those were events where like a party time for the adults. The women used to actually go, and the room would be full of smoke, because of course everybody smoked, and kids would be, I would be put through these events. Some involved animals, some involved fighting. Fighting's a big part of cult life. They want to see your level of courage and your level of compassion. A lot of it was about killing animals or pushing you beyond your limits, because they wanted to know what was inside of it. They wanted to know what your essence was all about. So but at 3 years old, sometime in my third year, the events changed dramatically. Women were no longer present. The men often wore robes. There was chanting. And events were designed, scenarios were designed specifically for me to initiate me into the cult. And to be initiated into the cult, the climax of that event would be me killing a human being by stabbing him through the heart with a knife. I'm sorry I didn't warn people. And this went on and on and on and on. And I wouldn't do what they wanted to do. And it's hard to imagine a little boy being able to resist the peer pressure of his dad, the cult leader, and all the other men. And so this, each time I refused, I would be subjected to beatings, sodomy and mind control programming. As soon as I threw the knife down and yelled no, they would rush me, and I would take off, and of course they would catch me because I was 3 years old. This went on and on until about my fifth year, and when I was five, the cult leader declared we must destroy him. If we don't, someday surely he will destroy us. And so my destruction was pretty much beating upon beating upon beating. They made me so afraid of confrontation. My courage was hidden deep down inside me, and I spent my whole life from the time I was 5 years old believing I was a coward until I met with Sandra and removed all those layers one block at a time. So I spent my whole adult life, and what I represented to the cult was light and love, and that was the thing they hated the most. And my declaration, also during that time period, I would yell at them that I am better than you because I don't hurt people who can't fight back. Most adults might laugh at the thought of a little boy doing that, but you don't understand. The people that are involved with cults are about hatred. They're about revenge. They don't love and cherish and want to protect the child. They want to use the child for their own perverted sexual gratification. They don't want to forgive people. They don't aspire to forgiveness. They want revenge. They don't think about love. They think about hate. So it's a real, like Sandra used the term paradigm shift. It's a real paradigm shift to kind of get into the way of thinking of those who are involved with cults. That's why the world has so much trouble believing it, because most of us can't think in that way. And so to get your head around it is a real challenge. My dad sought revenge against me my whole life. Like through my adult life, my family was subjected at times. Also, we were drugged at family occasions many times a year by people I associated with. You can imagine being born into a family like that, like I was, and being subjected to the things I was, that you would have no self-love, self-esteem, self-confidence, or self-worth. I had no social skills whatsoever, so I would always be an easy target. And so as I became a man or an adult, I didn't know how to make friends. I didn't know how to be with people, so I was an easy target to be drugged in a beer. And guys I might associate with recreationally, this happened to me time and time again, multiple times, probably every year from the time I was, well, from a teenager really till I was 53. When I first met Sandra, it was still happening to me. My dad was still involved in being there at events where I was drugged or coercing others to do the same to me, to drug me and get me in that spot. So then when I found out what had been happening to me and I had to start removing all that stuff, it is arduous work because I had 53 years to remove from my energy field. But as I did, my courage started to come back. So I started confronting some of those people, which I get the feeling that doesn't happen very often. I had my car damaged twice. The second time it was completely firebombed in an attempt to intimidate me. So since that point in time, my goal in life is to put pressure on the Premier and the Ontario Provincial Police to implement a ritual abuse task force to investigate the hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of crimes committed against me and sometimes my family for over 50 years. And as of yet, there's a conspiracy of silence. The media's part of it and the government's part of it. And I've written the Premier and major media outlets in Canada many thoughtful and respectful letters. I've released YouTubes. If you Google my name, you'll see five YouTubes that I've made, trying to get somebody, some other good-hearted person, to find at least one person in the government, between MPPs or MPs, or one good person in the media who would have the courage to call me up and ask me some questions. The Premier hasn't responded to even one letter I've made. The Commission of the OPP hasn't responded to any of the letters I've made. None of the media respond to any of the letters I have written. And I don't write those letters as an angry man. I write them as a person who's trying to make known the prevalence of cults and secret societies that practice Satanism so that children and others vulnerable can be protected. Because they're all sitting targets for these people when they're not aware that they're out there. And these people go where the children are. So where the children are, that's where they are. Not everyone that's with those children is a bad person, but some of them are. And if you're not aware of that, your children are susceptible. And that's what I want to make. That's, I figure, is one of my purposes in this life is to help make known that fact, to protect those children. Because I don't want other kids going through what I went through, what my children went through, and what Fran went through, and other friends that I have.
First of all, it's wonderful having Dave and Fran at my side on these things because they bring such authenticity and confirmation to what I've been working with all these years. But they also, when they're talking, it makes me think, oh yeah, I've missed this point and I've been missing that point to say right now. So one of the things that I would like to say is the role of the therapists, the police forces, and so on in dealing with this. We have been trained as a society to be blind to all this information. Dr. Jennifer Freid, who is a professor, she's actually Professor Jennifer Freid, whose father was one of the founding members of the false memory syndrome. She confronted her father, who denied everything anyway, and he started this false memory group. I don't know where he got all that money unless he was backed by somebody. But she went on to do other great work, including something she called societal betrayal. It's where our whole society is kind of turning a blind eye to what's happening with this population. And because the price to ourselves is too high if we acknowledge it. And we as a society of professionals are not seeing what needs to be seen here. And we have to recognize that in that respect, not only have these folks been sacrificed in one way or another by the cult, but we are sacrificing them with our own fear and our own cowardice. As a population, we need to wake up and support these people who have been through this. In the end, what you're going to find is it isn't just them who are suffering at the hands of the Illuminati and the Satanists. It's all of us, but I hope we get to that tonight. So, therapists, please wake up. See this for what it is. I know I'm hoping next year, Nibiru notwithstanding, to be able to come to Australia and New Zealand and hopefully with Dave or Fran or both, and do workshops and training therapists in how to face this stuff. Because there are a few things that, you know, are a little different from regular therapist work. The other thing is about symptoms. When Dave was going through his work, he started to get enormously dizzy. And Dave, maybe you would like to speak to that.
Like, it was funny because as I was uncovering things, my mom, my dad especially, was they would like to me to report to them on what I'd learned so far. And of course, I had been mind controlled programmed since I was a little boy to love my dad and to love my family. So I did, because mind control programs, that is, they're very powerful. If you've been mind control programmed, that's how you think. There's no escaping it. So I would have never have dreamt my dad was ever involved. When I discovered my parents involved, I couldn't believe it. That meant that every conscious memory I ever had in my life had to be recontextualized. Because everything, my life had been an illusion. What I thought it was, it wasn't. And so I believe that those dizzy periods were my mind just reconfiguring all my conscious memories to put the proper spin on them as to what really was going on. And so I had that for a period of time. I was so worried about it, I went to the Mayo Clinic. But of course, like I was, when the truth of my life became known to me in its entirety, I didn't have a nervous breakdown, but I guess I would likely be pretty close, have been pretty close to that. It was tough hanging on. I'll never forget the thoughts I used to have, like, is this my life? Because when I was in fear, all the cultists in my town made sure that they knew that I knew that they knew. And they would let me know, I would see their smirks. I would get inappropriate comments and things like that. Now, of course, once the fear's gone and I'm confronting them, that doesn't happen anymore. But I remember thinking, is this my life? Is this where I am? How am I ever going to make right what happened to me and my family? And I believe it will be made right, but of course, because I'm aligned with God and I have forgiven all those people, but it needs to be made known what they do so that others can be safe. I don't know if that answers the question. I forgot. I'm getting all riled up here, Sandra. I'm getting all charged. good energy here, you know.
Let it rip.
Well, the thing I was referring to is that we all get symptomatic, right? And anything that you don't process, if you are in a trauma, the reason it's a trauma is because it is so overwhelming that we cannot process that part of information at the time. So when we do that, the brain drops a biochemical curtain in the form of cortisol, and cortisol packs the memory away. But there's a high price to pay for an unprocessed, undigested piece of your experience. And that is a symptom. So people get headaches and, or they're sexually frigid or sexually promiscuous or they're angry or violent or they're addicted to something. They're just mean or they live alone or can't have an intimate relationship. There are all kinds of symptoms that result from this kind of repression. And when you bring that to the surface, again, there are a few symptoms, including headaches, body aches and pains. I've had people who, on recalling that they had their feet burned, broke out in blisters on their feet and couldn't walk on their feet for several hours. You know, that sort of thing. Well, the thing that happened for Dave was as he started to unwind this, he became dizzy. And we do a technique called muscle testing. It's one of the energetic methods that we use. And muscle testing will bypass the conscious mind and get directly to the root cause of anything. It's just a wonderful, wonderful technique. And the muscle testing was getting that Dave's extreme dizziness was due to his unwinding, like to facing his truth. But you always sort of make sure that you're working in the interest of the safety of the client. And, you know, I suggested he go to his doctor, and Dave, being Dave, went to the Mayo Clinic. And indeed, they found nothing physically wrong with him, and eventually the dizziness left. The other thing I wanted to say was that, you know, different types of PTSD require different focuses. And, you know, if somebody is in PTSD because they're a first responder or a veteran, then they will have different needs from somebody who has been satanically abused. And the difference between ritual abuse and satanic ritual abuse is that there is a spiritual component to the SRA, the satanic ritual abuse. And that has to be dealt with and addressed. And it's mandatory that anybody working in this field have a very strong protective belief system, and that the clients do also. Because, you know, we have been trained, like the history of suppression of spirituality and energetics in our society is massive. And we have been trained not to know. So I do believe the burning of the library in Alexandria was not accidental, but quite deliberate to keep important esoteric information away from the masses and in the hands of the few. And, of course, that was enforced by what happened during the witch burnings, when if anybody had knowledge of anything energetic or spiritual, that those people were murdered. Then in the European imperialistic surge, the whites went around the world destroying anybody and killing anyone who knew anything about energetics, sending a copy of the information back to the Vatican and burning all the other copies, which meant that a few people held all of this esoteric knowledge, and we were not privy to it. On top of that, in my opinion, if you read William Carr's book, all of the churches have been infiltrated and compromised by the Illuminati. They're leading us in spiritual dead ends because the goal of the Illuminati is to create a society that's immoral enough to worship Lucifer and to forget about any Christian values. And it is mandatory that any Christians listening to this really take their faith walk and their spiritual walk very, very seriously. And if you do enough Bible reading, you will see that all of this is mentioned in the Bible. You know, when you consider that Jay Parker has told me that about 800,000 children a year disappear, 800,000. At first I thought I had the number wrong, but no, I don't. What are we going to do? I mean, you know, the Bible says, you know, be ye hot or cold or I will spit you out. Well, we have all these children disappearing. The journalists are not reporting it. The churches aren't leading us in godly ways. The medicines aren't healing us. What are we going to do? We have to wake up, bring in the light one at a time, and watch what they're doing with our energetics. And, Fran, I don't know if you can take something from here if you would like, you know, dealing with the spiritual mechanisms that we found that they put on us.
Sure. My background, James, is a survivor of satanic ritual abuse in three types. One is the ancient ritualistic type with the cloaks and chanting and sacrifice and so on that Sandra talked about. The second type is the government institutionalized scientific method satanic ritual abuse called MKUltra, based on the Nazi system of torturing people. And the third type is a very high-tech type of abuse. Now, I'm just going to give you a little background, and that is when I was in grade 7, I started to have recall of certain things that were happening to me. And they included things. I would enter scenarios in my mind in which I was semi-conscious or unconscious or in great pain or rape or sexual perversion, torture. And I just thought I was a weird kid. I had no idea where these were coming from, but I could not let them go all of my life. And another feature of that was that all of those included a boy my age. We helped each other. And as it would have it, after I met Sandra, Spirit arranged it that I meet that person. And I think that's quite an unusual story when you've got someone that can corroborate what you have experienced. So in the sessions with Sandra, yes, we retrieve what's going on the physical level, but Sandra suggested that we look at the energetic level, like kind of look with your third eye into the psychic space and observe what's going on there. And we began to encounter a number of things in the psychic space, what they were doing to the energy field. And we have compiled probably literally hundreds of things that they can do to disable the energy body. And we're in a chakra body energy system, as Sandra mentioned, where we have chakras, meridians, auric layers. And if you consider this our energetic vehicle, it's not a far leap to just think of us as a car for a moment. And if you think of all the ways that a car could be disabled, we found that every single thing in our energetic body can be disabled in the same way. And There are some very soft ways that people could disable a car or the energy body. And if you are a very skilled practitioner, there's some extremely sophisticated ways. And so this is the work that Sandra and I and Dave are doing to find all these satanic energetic mechanisms, which in a way are like hidden machinery on our energy field that keep us dysfunctioning. Sandra's really good at going to the energetic field, the Christ consciousness, which holds all truth, and receiving the healings for those. What do we do to heal those mechanisms? And so we go through the healings and make our way back slowly, step by step, to what we really are. And I know Dave has said that he would never give up the background that he has been through. And I would say the same thing, because knowing that this dark spectrum exists, it puts into very sharp perspective that the light spectrum also exists. And it is a big paradigm shift. And finally, we are seeing what is really going on, and we're dealing with reality and calling in the light spirits. And I would like to say that in this rather dark, controlled world, a consciousness did enter that opened the prison door, opened the potential for healing. But I think we'll check with you, Dave, and also Sandra, but in my opinion, we each have to take the steps to do those healings. Dave, would you agree?
Yeah, Fran and I have worked on healing in the past three, how many years is it now? I forget. Is it 14?
It's just over three.
Yeah. Since we met, we've worked probably four or five nights a week on healing, and Fran has recognized many of those healing mechanisms in me and some in herself and other people too. But her and I have worked very closely on this. And then between Fran and Sandra, and sometimes me also, the healing will come. And we've learned, or we believe, that the more devoted you are to God like for myself, I made a prayer in 2008 that I declared my intention to be all that I could be in love and light. And I asked for God's help in doing so. And I believe all this healing came to me as a result of that prayer through Fran and Sandra and others. And the more devoted you are to God, the more faith you have in God, the more quickly He will bring these healings to you. He will bring them to you if you're devoted to Him. And I think the three of us are in agreement on that. And Fran and I have done a lot of healing in a very short period of time. Well, I had to erase 53 years of Satanism, which is no small feat. So I'm not saying I'm even all the way there yet, but I think I'm in a pretty good place. I have to, there's a few small areas that still need work, of course, intend to do so.
Fran, do you want to comment on that?
No, you go ahead. Sandra. Okay, I'll go ahead. People bring to light the things that you haven't said. And one of the things that I want to say is that in William Carr's book, he talks about how the Illuminati set up countries to be at war with one another so they can profit financially. And if you look at some of the wars, you will see that the people who make the bombs, I know during the war in Iraq that the bombs that were dropped on that population were bombs that would have had to have been destroyed at great expense to the armaments companies had they not used them in a war. And the armaments, and they were all, friends of the Bushes. And the other part is that when they went to rebuild with the infrastructure, the Bushes only hired contractors that were part of their circle. So, you know, they win no matter what's happening. And in the meantime, what are they doing to us, to the little people? How much suffering is caused? And those wars are like international ritual abuse. You know, they're blood sacrifices to Satan on a global level. During those wars, as you well know, both in camps and so on, Auschwitz and Bergen-Belsen and so on, people were tortured and experiments were done in torturing. Well, gee, that sounds like a satanic club to me. But what happened was that you would think that people like Mengele and others who perpetrated those crimes would have been tried at Nuremberg and executed or jailed or whatever. But no, the American CIA brought them over to the States. What they did was give them a different identity, pay them big salaries, and had the German torturers teach the CIA how to torture to such a fine degree, how to make torture a fine art, just like they do in the cult. You can read about some of this. Carol Rutz has written a book called A Nation Betrayed, and she talks about the types of tortures that she and 2 million other Americans and some Canadians were exposed to. So they experimented on 2 million Americans and tortured them to see how to refine torture. Well, it seems to me this is a national crime. Why can we not hold these governments accountable? So there's that. Now, there's also, when clients have gone through this horrible experience, at some point I will suggest to them that they look into the spaces and into the psychic, what we call the psychic space. And these are people, my clients are often people who have been through absolutely horrific events. You know, I was dealing with a young lady in the last few days who was saying, where was God when this happened to me? This has really shaken my faith. And I've had dozens of people say that to me. And at that point, I'll say, well, look into the spaces and see what's there. I mean, we have been so led away from believing in anything except the tangible materialistic world. Mm-hmm. But there's a world of wonder beyond this world. There's a world of wonder in the spaces between us. And when she looked into the psychic space, what she saw were the angels who were helping her to stay alive, you know, who were helping preserve her soul, because as I said earlier, in the end, that's what they're after. What's the name of that book, that name I keep forgetting because the cover's so bad?
Psychic Dictatorship.
Thank you, Fran. There's a book called Psychic Dictatorship by
Alex Constantine.
the cover, oh my gosh, the cover's so startling that I never remember the name. Anyway, in that book, he talks about the 100 years of covert CIA experimentation to control the psyche of the American people. And when what you're doing is changing the frequency of people, I mean, these frequencies and energetics control everything about us. They control how we think, how we feel, how much vitality we have, how healthy our bodies are, and so on. And, I mean, my husband and I have studied sound therapy that we got from some American ladies, Sherry Edwards from Ohio, and Kay, who runs Biosonics, I think the name of it is now. Kay Liu, can't remember her last name. Do you remember her?
Yeah.
Anyway, so, and we know that sound heals and frequencies heal and light therapy heals. Everything boils down to frequency, everything. And what is happening now is that these governments have such sophisticated technology, which I've heard from insiders is, you know, like hundreds of years ahead of what we're aware of. And if you can imagine, if we have technology now that if we bumped into somebody or a population of somebody's from 100 years ago, how startled they would be by it. And if this, the governments have technology that's, you know, 1 or 2 or 300 years ahead of where we are now, what are they capable of that we don't know about? many, many people email me and say, look, I'm being targeted with frequencies. What do I do about it? If anybody has the answer to that, please email me, Sandra Fecht, F-E-C-H-T, at Rogers, R-O-G-E-R-S.com. Because, I mean, I can give the few answers that I have for that kind of targeting. I don't know. It is horrendous when your frequency is targeted by a government. You know, we have to, as I said earlier, and I keep saying, we need to wake up and figure this out and see what we can do collectively as a population, not in terms of a military or seditious thing, but in terms of consciousness, because when you get to a consciousness that is at a certain frequency, I really believe that for the most part you're beyond their control. Maybe not in some ways, but certainly spiritually.
I have something to say, James, and that is that it's a very difficult subject, satanic ritual abuse. The things that happen on the physical level are really horrendous. And the whole ploy is to get us to focus on the physical level and completely obscure the energetic level. Like, I think there's been a huge movement of darkness to hide from us the fact that we have an energetic level, to know how to use it and work with it and enjoy it and elevate it and lift one's consciousness. So there's been a big ploy to completely subvert that. And the healing can only happen at the energetic level. So unless the therapists know what is going on, they have a familiarity with the energy field and can consult the energy field as well, the victim or the survivor is just relegated to reliving a horrific physical experience over and over, which is re-traumatizing. But if you can address the energetic level, this is such a hopeful story, and wondrous things begin to happen as your level of consciousness begins to rise. Now, today I was at work, and like, it's not all a straight up rise. It's a fantastic journey, but today at work, I was triggered by something that someone said. And what triggering means is that it'll be something in the environment, something in the contemporary environment that puts your energy field back into a state of complete collapse, fear, because it reminds you of something that happened that is still unaddressed. And that happened to me today, and I was shaking, and I would have, like, I probably would have had to leave the post for a while. But that is an opportunity for me to realize, there's something there. Thank you very much. I can now address that and clean that out of my field. Dave talks about himself as an average person. I'm an average person. You don't have to be particularly skilled or gifted to walk the spiritual path. What you do have to do is decide to take the steps. Nobody can do your healing for you. You can't leave it to the higher power. The higher power opens the way for you, but each of us have to take the steps. And what I found is, contrary to the side of darkness, on the side of light, there is no glass ceiling. If you walk the walk, you rise in your level of consciousness. And it's only left to you what you are willing to do. And one of Dave's favorite authors, and Sandra's and mine, who is Dr. David R. Hawkins, a famous psychiatrist, and he has a wonderful expression that is, the path is narrow and steep. Waste no time. Like, take those steps. The reward is amazing. So in that sense, yes, we're dealing with some very difficult material, but the rewards are wondrous.
Yeah, sorry, Fran, to cut that off, because I think that was really well said. one of the things that I think Fran brought to the surface there was symptoms as friends. What we do in our culture is somebody has depression or anxiety or whatever is we medicate them and kind of shut them up. And what we do is somebody starts talking in traditional psychiatry about shape-shifting lizards and, you know, flesh-eating, blah, blah, whatever, is that we medicate them and hospitalize them so that they aren't going to talk about that too much. What a different approach it would be if we looked at symptoms as friends. These symptoms are trying to tell you that there is some unhealed part of your soul that needs to be addressed. And once you get the message of the trigger, the message of the symptom, then the whole thing just kind of quietly leaves. Whenever there's a symptom, you've also lost a gift. Dave, I see you smiling away there. It's true. And then you start to get your gifts back. Like, if you have been traumatized, perhaps you lose your patience and you become impatient. Not that I know anybody who ever had that experience, James. You know, but once you have done the work and dealt with the meaning of the symptoms, then that patience comes drifting back to you. And it's really a very, very lovely thing to witness. And I feel very privileged to be able to witness this with Fran, Dave, and, you know, many others.
We reached the end of the first half, and we're just getting started. Thank you so much for sharing what you have thus far. It's been eye-opening for me. It's been uplifting and encouraging for me. I know that people that are going through this, that are hearing this information, it's encouraging for them too, because if they know that people such as yourselves have taken these strides, have done the inner work, and have strengthened their belief in a higher power, it means that they can do the same thing too, because all a winner needs to know is another winner did it first. And so, thank you for being a shining example for many out there going through these challenges. It could be so isolating. It could be so depressing. But, you know, we here at Cosmic Switchboard are all about solutions. We're all about hope. We're all about upliftment and encouragement for others. Well, we'll reach the end of the first half.
If you like what we do here at the Cosmic Switchboard, if you believe in what we do, please go to our website, thecosmicswitchboard.com, and become a member. And we'll be right back with our very special guest, therapist Sandra Fecht and SRA survivors Fran Toews and Dave Staffen. We'll see you at the top of the next hour.